chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Bob Berg on the show today. Bob is the author of a number of books on sales, marketing, and influence, with total book sales of well over a million copies. His book, The Go-Giver, co-authored with John David Mann, has sold over 975,000 copies, and it has now been translated into 29 languages. So, Bob, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so delighted that you're making the time to be on the show today.
Lisa, my honor and pleasure. It's so great to be with you.
You know, I told you, I still remember in about 2008, you came to St. Louis. You came as a keynote speaker for an event, and you had just published the Go-Giver book. That book, your message had such a profound impact. You truly influenced my thinking when I came to hear you. So thank you so much for that. And I know you've influenced many people.
Well, thank you. That's always so nice to hear. Not something I ever take for granted, believe me.
Well, and then just recently, you and I have a mutual friend, Bill Ellis.
Yeah, Bill's a great guy, one of my favorite people.
And he reconnected us. And so I'm just so glad that it worked. And you're sitting in Florida and I'm sitting in St. Louis and we're making it work because of the wonder of technology.
That's right.
So let's just get into it. People may not know about you, like your background before you became this best-selling author. Tell us a little bit about how you grew up. I know you didn't grow up in Florida. You grew up on the East Coast, right?
Yeah, grew up in Massachusetts and actually began my career as a broadcaster, first doing radio sports for a local Massachusetts station. And then I moved to the Midwest, worked for a very small ABC TV affiliate, and eventually worked my way up to the late night news guy. And you know, I really wasn't very good at that. And I could tell it just was not going to be my career. And so I like to say I graduated into sales. The challenge I had was that I knew nothing about sales on any formal basis. I had no training. And the company that I was with, nice people, but their training was, we'll say, negligible.
Uh-huh, right.
Meaning non-existent. So I was really out there on my own. And I floundered for the first few months till I was one day in a bookstore. And I came across a couple of books on selling, which, by the way, and this was about 40 years ago, I did not at that time even realize there were books on selling. I didn't realize that was a thing. Now, of course, that's ever present. Back then, that wasn't as big a thing. So the two books were by two people who'd become real heroes of mine eventually, Tom Hopkins and Zig Ziglar. And I know you're familiar and have studied both of those two. So really, I got their books. And I like to say that I did not read the books. I devoured the books. And every night when I'd get home from work, I would study them. I'd read them. I'd take notes. I would rehearse and I'd practice and I'd drill. And within a few weeks, my sales really began to go well. It became, you know, predictable. It was really kind of a neat thing. It opened up a new world to me. I had a methodology now. And I think if you have a methodology to follow, you can pretty much accomplish anything within reason. I call it following a system. And I personally define a system as the process of predictably achieving a specific result based on a very specific set of how-to principles. And I think the key, Lisa, is predictability. If it's been proven that by doing A, you'll get the desired result of B, then you know that all you need to do is A and continue to do A and continue to do A.
Keep doing it.
Yeah. And you're yeah. eventually going to get the desired result of B. So that was, you know, just to learn that was a big boon for me. I also quickly began to realize learning sales was not just about learning the skills, as important as those are, of course, like any business, any profession. It was really a matter of developing myself personally and growing personally. So I began to get the books I kept hearing about from everyone, from Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People to Hill's Think and Grow Rich to Klassen's The Richest Man in Babylon to Maxwell Maltz's Psycho-Cybernetics to The Magic of Thinking Bit to all the classics of the sales and really personal development field. Because really what we need to do is grow ourselves on the inside, right? That inside growth will manifest itself as outside success.
There's so much packed in there, Bob. So, you know, as I think about organizations, our core values follow the acrostic DELIGHT because we want delighted clients. So it's what we say. But the L stands for learning share. We really do encourage our people to learn. The G is grow as individuals because I think leaders need to understand that the best thing you can do is to give your people permission to grow themselves. Because when they grow themselves, the organization's going to grow. The organization's going to go to the next level too. But you got to start with your people.
Yeah. Well, that's such a great leadership principle. And obviously, you're creating that culture of growth. You know, as the saying goes, you can lead from anywhere. However, the culture of that leadership comes from the top and trickles down.
So I just love what you said. You know, you went into that job not really knowing anything, but here's what you did say, and I'm just going to reiterate it. Sales improved dramatically. You don't really have to know it all, but you need to know where to look, either in books or seminars or webinars or listening to podcasts or, you know, just having a mentor. And we'll talk a little bit more about that too. But let's get into it because I really want our listeners to get a sense of what you've done with these books. So you did finally, you pivoted because you started learning sales for yourself. You were very successful. And then you wrote your first book. Can I ask you, why did you decide to write your first book?
So I had started speaking as a career. I had been doing it for about probably 3 or 4 years or so. And I had gotten to the point after a bunch of ups and downs and not knowing if I was going to actually be able to make it or not, got to the point where I was achieving some success as a speaker. After about 4 years or so, I'd say, I was at a National Speakers Association convention and I was talking to a few people, some of the older, wiser speakers who'd been around longer than I have. As you said earlier, you can find wisdom in many places and often it's from the people you speak to, you know, in the hallways of a convention. And they just said, you know, Berg, you're really at this point, you need to have a book. You need to write a book. It's going to make you more marketable. You're going to get higher fees. It's going to be easier to get the bookings. It's going to create really good credibility and positioning for you in the marketplace. At that time, I really had no desire to write a book, but I thought, you know, it sounded right. So I did write the first book, which was called Endless Referrals. The subtitle was Network Your Everyday Contacts into Sales. It was really just for utilitarian purposes. And they were right. It helped me a lot. I used it as an outbound positioning tool, and it really did exactly what they said it was going to do. So it was good advice. After that, I think most of my books that I wrote were because I felt I had a message to communicate and that the best way to get it out to the most people was to write. So the first book, you know, was, again, just for the purposes of marketing. All the other books after that is because I really felt I wanted to share a message.
Right. I love it. It's the one to many.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about books. They live beyond you.
Yes.
They live in perpetuity. You can hand them out to people. So like I said, I heard you in 2008. You had just published The Go-Giver. Very quickly after you published it, it shot to the number 6 spot on the Wall Street Journal's business bestsellers just 3 weeks after it released. You know, and it reached number 9 on Business Week. It's been translated into 21 languages and sold close to 1 million copies now, something like this, right? And I remember hearing you speak about The Go-Giver. I had bought the book and it just impacted me so much. You wrote this book as a parable. And what you did in this book, it's the 5 laws of stratospherical success. And maybe we can cover just a couple of these. But in the book, the Pindar is the mentor, if you will. And then Joe is the young man. And Pindar promised to reveal to him his secrets if he would meet with him every day for an hour for a week. The whole parable is kind of written around that. There's 5 of these laws of success. I don't want to take the words out of your mouth. Download a little bit of that to us, Bob, if you would.
Sure. And the book was co-authored with John David Mann. And John was really the master storyteller, the lead writer. As you can tell, I'm more of a how-to guy. I'm step 1, step 2, step 3. So John is a wonderful storyteller. So it was a neat collaboration. The 5 laws are really built around a basic premise. And the premise itself is that shifting your focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing immense value to others, understanding that doing so is not only a more fulfilling way of conducting business, it's actually the most financially profitable way as well. And not for some, woo-woo way out there, magical, mystical type of reasons. It actually makes very logical sense, very rational sense when you think about it. When you're that person who can take your focus off yourself and place it onto others, focusing on their needs, on their wants, on their desires, helping them solve their challenges, helping make their life better, helping them get what they want, helping them to get closer to happiness just by virtue of you being in their life, people feel good about you. People want to get to know you. They like you. They trust you. They want to be a part of your life, a part of your business, if that's appropriate, if they need what you have. But they definitely want to be your personal walking ambassador and tell others about you. It's actually very rational that this would be. The 5 laws which are built around that are the laws of value, compensation, influence, authenticity, and receptivity. The law of value is the foundational law, if you will, a foundational principle. And this is really all about the experience you're providing another person. Any product or service is designed to do a certain thing, which is usually good. And it's something that by its nature will bring that person more in value than what they're paying for. Otherwise, why would they buy it? Okay, so if you have a pizza restaurant and a family comes in and they buy a large pizza with certain things on it, and it's $20, they're paying $20, but they're doing that because they feel they're getting much more than $20 worth. So aside from the taste of the pizza, the fact that it could feed the family for the evening, it meant neither of the parents had to cook or clean. It means they could all go out for a good family bonding experience. Perhaps the atmosphere and the ambiance is really pleasant and wonderful. The wait staff is really nice. The owner comes over and says hello and makes people feel good about themselves. So they paid $20, but they may have gotten $100, $200 worth of value. They got more than what they paid for. Okay?
Yeah, it's more than pizza.
Exactly.
More than pizza.
Exactly. And at the same time, that pizza that the restaurateur sold for $20 probably cost him or her $3 in terms of ingredients, in terms of the staff, the electricity, keeping the place open. So what happened is both parties profited, which is exactly what's supposed to happen in a market-based exchange. There should always be 2 profits, the buyer profits and the seller profits, because each of them come away better off afterwards than they were beforehand. So basically, the law of value says it's not a matter of just exchanging your product or service for an equal amount of money. It's making the experience so wonderful that that other person has gotten more in value than what they've paid for.
And you know what's going to happen? They're going to come back there. Right? Mm-hmm. Because it is more than pizza. It's how you make people feel.
Yeah.
I'm reminded Bhavani Amirthalingam is the CDTO for Ameren, which is our big utility here in St. Louis. I'll never forget her saying, "I've never worked to build my resume." She said, "Every job I've ever had, I've just gone in there and tried to bring more value.
That's wonderful.
Bring more than I take to the organization. And she said, my resume has built itself. I've never worried about that.
Wonderful.
And it just reminds me of that. But we need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Bob Berg. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over 2 decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities. Well, welcome back. So, Bob, I want you to talk about one of the other laws in the Go Giver book, and that is the law of influence, because we hear that so much now. Let's talk about influence. Talk about what you say is the law of influence.
Well, the law of influence itself simply says that your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. This sounds rather counterintuitive when you first hear it, until you realize that the greatest leaders you know, the top influencers, the most sustainably successful, highest money earning salespeople, this is simply how they run their lives and conduct their businesses. They're always looking out for the other person's benefit. Now, let me clarify and qualify this as well, because I think it can easily be misunderstood. And I think it's very important that when we say place the other person's interests first, we certainly don't mean that you should be anyone's doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial in any way. Absolutely not at all. It's simply, as Joe, the protege in the story, learned from several of his mentors, the golden rule of business, the golden rule of sales is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And Lisa, there's simply no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you in others than by genuinely and authentically moving from what we call an I focus or me focus to an other focus. Looking to, as Sam, one of the mentors in the story, advised Joe, make your win all about the other person's win. Now, when we talk about influence in today's vernacular, as you said, you know, a lot of people think of influencers as people online who, you know, utilize their name or their brand to sell. Well, first of all, we've always had these. Remember, they were celebrities and sports stars on television selling aspirin. They don't know anything about aspirin, but they're influencers. So that's not really what we're talking about in terms of it. But there's a truth there in that influence, by definition, is simply the ability to move a person or persons to a desired action, usually within the context of a specific goal. So if someone's hiring someone, whether it's a celebrity or what have you, to move people to action, well, that's a form of influence. But I think that while that's the definition, Lisa, I don't think that's the essence of influence. The essence of influence is pull as opposed to push, as in the old leadership question, how far can you push a rope? And we know the answer is not very, at least not very fast or very effectively, which is why great influencers don't push. They don't push their ideas on others. They don't push their will on others. They don't push themselves on others. In other words, they're not push-y. You never hear people saying, wow, that David or that Susan, she is so influential. She has a lot of push with people. No, she's influential. She has a lot of pull with people. And that pull is an attraction. Great influencers attract people first to themselves and then to their ideas. Now, the question is, well, how? How do they do that? How does this pull look? And that's where, you know, I think the great influencer, as John and I call it in the Go-Giver Influencer, genuine influencers, they understand on both an intellectual level and on a heart level what I believe was Dale Carnegie's underlying premise in his classic How to Win Friends and Influence People. And this is where Mr. Carnegie wrote, ultimately, people do things for their reasons, not our reasons. I often, when I speak at conferences to salespeople, one of the first things I'll say is, nobody's going to buy from you because you have a quota.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're not going to buy from you because you need the money or even really because you're a nice person. They're going to buy from you only because they believe they'll be better off by doing so than by not doing so. And free market-based environment, when I say free market, I simply mean no one's forced to buy from anyone else. That's the only reason why anyone should buy from you or from me or from anyone, because they feel they'll be better off by doing so. This is great, though, because it means that that salesperson or leader who understands this, they understand their focus must be on bringing immense value to others. This is why John and I say that money is simply an echo of value. Right? It's the thunder to value's lightning, meaning nothing more than the focus must be on the value you're providing another person. And the money you receive is simply a natural result of that value. Well, it's the same with leadership. They're not going to follow you because you want them to or because you have a goal. So the great leader, the genuine influencer, constantly asks themselves questions such as, how does what I'm asking this person to do, how does it align with their goals?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How does what I want this other person to do, how does it align with their values? How am I solving a problem for them? How am I helping them get to where they want to be? And when we ask ourselves these questions thoughtfully, intelligently, genuinely, authentically, not as a way to manipulate another human being into doing our will, but as a way of building everyone in the process, now we've come a lot closer to earning that person's commitment rather than trying to depend on some type of compliance, such as manipulation or force or threat or what have you. And one of my great friends, a wonderful leadership authority, her name is Dondi Scumaci. I love what she says. She says, when it comes to leadership, when it comes to influence, compliance will never take you where commitment can go.
Two different things. Two different things. They may be complying on the outside, but they're standing up on the inside.
Oh, exactly. You know? Sure. It's not sustainable.
Right. It's not sustainable. Well, I think this is why it just resonates with me so much, Bob, because I believe that's the way I've always tried to lead. And it's really putting yourself in the other person's shoes.
Yeah,
you know, I wouldn't be compelled, you know, unless I really trusted the person or if I really knew that they cared about me. And, you know, when you read anything on employee engagement, two things out there right now is that you got to be obsessed over the customer. It's the customer experience, but it's also the employee experience, right?
Absolutely.
Because the talent that you attract and retain is so important and so paramount to everything, right? But it's really about caring about those people and putting yourself in their shoes and saying, what are they valuing? Because what you think they're valuing may not be, you know, it may not be exactly right. So it's so good.
In St. Louis, you've got a great example of that in Bob Chapman with Barry Waymiller, who's one of my heroes.
Yes, I love Bob and the whole Barry Waymiller story. So I want to move into your latest book, The Go-Giver Influencer, and I'm just going to read just a couple of testimonials on this. So John Gordon, if you've read John Gordon, he wrote The Energy Bus and a lot of other great books out there. He says, it's a delightful story that serves as a guidebook for creating common ground, reconciliation, and genuine influence. Adam Grant, I remember reading Give and Take many years ago. He says, it's a timely reminder that influence depends less on what we get from others and more about what we give. And so you and I have talked about that, Bob, and even the go-giver. You said it's not a new term because, you know, you used to say, oh, to be successful, you got to be a go-getter. But a go-getter, often you associate that with taking.
Yeah, I think it depends. You know, Napoleon Hill in Think and Grow Rich said the day of the go-getter has ended. He has been supplanted by the go-giver. But I think what Mr. Hill meant was rather than go-getter meant more like a go-taker. Because I think a go-getter, I think we'd all agree is a go-getter is a good thing when you think about taking action.
Motivation.
Right? Without it, you know, it doesn't really work too well. You can have the greatest thoughts, best ideas, the nicest intent. But without action, you know, good luck in making anything happen. Yeah, we like to say be a go-getter, person of action, and a go-giver, someone who is absolutely laser-focused on bringing immense value to others. Just don't be a go taker. And that's the person I think you and I are talking about who feels almost entitled to take without having added value to the person, to the process, to the situation. And they tend to be very frustrated because they rarely attain the level of success they feel they deserve. And even those times when they do, and they do a lot, it tends to be very difficult for them to maintain and sustain because it hasn't been built on a foundation of relationships. And so it's very difficult to sustain that for so long. You got to work a lot harder when you're a go-taker than if you're a go-giver.
Yeah, I agree. I could not agree more. Well, I told you, I love this book. I downloaded it and then I bought it. And I've now bought a copy for our son, Jordan, because he's kind of looking at a new enterprise. And I thought it would be great for him to read it. But again, it's a parable. And you've got Jillian and Jackson. You don't have Pindar. You have the judge and the coach.
Right.
This is so fun to me, Bob, because I know that you were a Golden Glove amateur boxer, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, way back, many a moon ago.
Right. And what we find in the Go-Giver Influencer is that coach is too. And so I love that you kind of brought your own personal experience in there. We kind of go through here and we talk about a winning strategy. And I think that is coach talking to Jillian. Then the natural negotiator, the judge, is talking to Jackson. These two people are kind of coming together. Tell the listeners just the premise. And I think, again, this is where your personality is coming in, Bob, to this book, because I know you're an animal lover. And what's Jackson trying to do?
Yeah, well, he's developed a line of pet food that is really good and healthy and nutritious and locally sourced and all those good things. And Jillian, who is a buyer for the big pet store company, and they want to carry Jackson's line. However, to do so and to scale it, it's going to lose some of the quality that Jackson is very concerned about. But the two of them really, if they could get together on this, have a win-win in the highest regard. And they both have what the other wants, because Jackson also needs the funding because he's about to go broke, basically, with what he's doing. But while it should be a business match made in heaven, the two constantly, and they're both nice people, but they're coming at it based on their own needs and wants.
Their own values, and yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so every conversation seems to take them further apart. And then, of course, they both have mentors. Judge Celia Henshaw is Jackson's, and then there's the coach, who is Jillian's. And they come to realize that if they can step into the other person's shoes, if they can get to know what the other person needs, wants, and desires, they're probably going to end up finding out how it works best for everyone. And it's not a matter of giving in. It's less negotiation than it is collaboration and building a bigger pie for everyone. But really, the premise of this story is that to be able to learn how to communicate with people in such a way that you can get the results you want while making other people feel genuinely good about themselves, about the situation, and about you.
Well, it is just a terrific book. And I have to tell you, when you introduced Miss B, you know, it says Miss B is feeding children that don't have enough at home. You know, they're feeding them breakfast and lunch, and they stop in just as Jillian reached the table. So did a trio of children with empty trays, clearly angling for seconds, which the hairnet woman, which is Miss B, began enthusiastically serving Jillian, heard her address one as Master Ryan, the other one as Miss Tamika, as she was addressing them like royalty. She all but curtsied to them. It goes on just talking about, and then the coach says, we feed over 500 kids here every weekday morning before school. You know, I'm reading this from this point on in the book, I'm crying. So this book evoked a lot of different emotions.
Well, that's the writing of John David Mann. Believe me, he's the guy with the writer's touch.
So it says here, you know, Jillian followed the glance. She said, I notice how you treat these kids. It's like they're like royalty. Every one of these children needs food in their belly, said Miss B. Providing that is the easy part. We also make sure we send them off with some self-respect and some dignity under their belt. Malnourishment, sad to say, comes in so many forms. I loved it. I just cry, cry, cry. And I love, too, you got animals in the book.
Oh, yeah, they play a big part.
So Solomon is Jackson's dog.
Solomon the Wise Dog. And
the Wise Dog.
Leo Catra.
Yes, and is a blue Russian cat. Yeah, so I love it. There's just so much wisdom there to learn, and I would just encourage our listeners to go out and get it. I do want to ask you one question. Can you talk about the elephant in the park?
Well, it's all about belief systems and understanding that the way we see the world limits us based on our belief system, what I call our unconscious operating system. That, you know, we all grow up with a set of beliefs that were handed to us, and we see the world a certain way. And it's a combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, news media, television, everything we tend to see the world from our own viewpoints. There's a very, very old story about the six blind men from Indostan. And they all were feeling different parts of an elephant. And the one who was feeling the legs said, well, obviously an elephant is a tree trunk. You know, what else could it be? The one who was feeling the tail said, no, obviously an elephant is a rope. The one who was feeling the torso said, no, you're all wrong. It's obviously an elephant is a big wall, you know. And so all of them all had their own views of what an elephant is. And so often in life, that's what we do. We see everything from our own viewpoint, and we fail to see that there are other perspectives.
And that's the whole point, is to put yourself in the other person's shoes to see their viewpoint, right? So that's the whole point. So Bob, this is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
My feeling is that empathy is the difference maker. And I know empathy is a word that is bandied about now. You know, obviously emotional intelligence has really taken on a life of its own in the mainstream, and I think for good reason. But I think empathy, which is also a learned skill, some people come to empathy very naturally. For others, it's a learned skill, and it can be learned. The dictionary definition of empathy is the identification with or vicarious experiencing of another person's feelings. The challenge is we're not that person, so we don't necessarily know how they feel. So I think in communicating empathy, it's not that you have to understand exactly how they feel, because you might not. It's understanding that they're feeling something and then showing up in such a way that they know that you are there to help them through whatever is distressing to them. And so I think that when we can do that, when we can really feel, maybe not exactly what they're feeling, but feel that they're feeling something and focus on being there for them, I think you do that, you're 9 steps ahead of the game in a 10-step game.
I could not agree more. And we certainly need that today now more than ever, I think, you know. One other thing I want to say about this book that I love is, you know, you even give some reflection questions. I've got a really dear friend, Cheryl Batchelder, and she says, you know, sometimes it's not that we need more input in our life. We need to rumble with what we already know.
Well, Cheryl's certainly a wonderful example of leadership, isn't she?
Oh, she sure is. Servant leader through and through. She's definitely a go-giver. So, Bob, I want to give you the opportunity to pitch something. You know, I don't know if you want to talk about the book, but what do you want to tell our listeners?
Well, they can come to burg.com, and they can check out the books if they'd like, read a free chapter so that they can see if they like it first, and then they can always click through. We also have a online membership community called the Go-Giver Success Alliance. So we welcome people to check that out as well. So burg.com.
Very good. Well, Bob, thank you so much for being on the show today. I can't wait for our listeners to hear all of your wisdom and insights, and enjoy the rest of your day there in Jupiter.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I greatly appreciate you, and thank you for all the wonderful work you're doing.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.